Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is BJ and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, BJ.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other. They may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to get engaged in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the steps discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 1B. We welcome our panel, please welcome our panel this evening. We have Harmony and Mike. Okay, I will read the first paragraph on page 5, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So, step 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So, starting on page 5. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. But then I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply did not know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed, and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day, I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did.
Harmony. I'm Harmony. I'm an alcoholic.
Harmony.
Very grateful to be sober. Happy to be up here with BJ and Mike. So, I definitely have the story of getting accidentally drunk. There was a particular incident where I was trying to control my drinking. At the time, I wouldn't have had said it that way, but that's basically what I was doing. I was getting lots of consequences. My mom told me that they would throw me out of the house if they ever caught me drinking again. And she had gone out of town, and I was trying to change what I drank. What I really like is vodka with like a splash of orange juice. And I was, this particular party, I was like, okay, well, I'll drink root beer schnapps and cream soda, and maybe I won't get so trashed. And I woke up in a party house with, in a bed, and like, I mean, fully clothed and everything, but the look, I was there with some guy that I didn't even know, and the look on his face when we both woke up, I didn't necessarily have a ride home, and it was so miserable, like, because I was like, hi, I'm here, but can you give me a ride home? or I'm going to have to walk halfway across Duluth, Minnesota, where I'm from. But so things like that were happening all the time, and so I was trying to not drink, and I had this resolve that Bill was talking about here in his story, where I was like, I'm not going to drink. I'm just not going to do it anymore. I have lots to live for. I want a scholarship for swimming. I'm just going to stop hanging out with these people. That's the big excuse that I told my family and others, is that it was my lore companions that they were the reason why I drank the way that I did. And I wasn't drinking, and I had announced it to everybody, and I had this really high resolve, and I even I readily admitted that alcohol was a problem. And there, where I grew up, the Minnesota State Hockey Tournament is a really big deal. It's like the biggest party in the entire of the entire year, and all of my friends were going down to Minneapolis and driving down there, and I was like, I have to go. I won't drink, but I have to go with them or whatever. And I the first night, even the afternoon that they were there, people started lining up drinks on the in the hotel room on the dresser. There was beers out, and then a bunch of fuzzy navels. And before I even had a second thought, I didn't even think, I'm drinking. It was just like bam, 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 bam. And I was so wasted that night. I drove all over. I pissed off every single last friend that I have. I mean, I won't go into all the details of the drunkalog, but when I woke up the next morning, everybody was mad at me, but I provided the car. So I was like, if you guys don't like it, you guys can walk back to Duluth, you know? And I had not planned on drinking. Whenever I had developed that really high resolve of that I was going to change my life, I was going to stop this pattern, I was going to stop doing these things over and over and over again, I would inevitably drink again no matter what. And usually it wasn't a long time. It was like a matter of a week and I'd be drunk again. And then, you know, like in that particular example, it was everybody else's fault. You know, it was everybody else's fault. It wasn't my fault that I stopped drinking. It was, screw all of you if you don't like it, because this is what I'm doing. So that's all I have to share on that.
I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
When I first got here, I thought that, you know, when I was new, I was in here just dying, sitting in the back, holding my head, crying, the whole deal. And I thought really, really that I was the stupidest guy in this place. I thought somewhere in high school, because I knew in health class somewhere, they talked about drugs and alcohol. And I must have missed that day, because you guys were back there going, oh, you have an allergic reaction. I go, what are you talking about? I don't know what that means. You know, you have this craving. You're telling me something that's another language. I don't know what you're talking about. And you're laughing, and then you're saying, you know, your mind, you crave it. And I'm like, I don't understand what you're talking about. So if you're new, I share this sometimes. We sound sometimes like we know what we're talking about. And when we were first here, we were dying. You know, I just said, I didn't have a clue, and I was scared to death to do any of this. So if you're new and you're scared to death, welcome aboard. You know, this first sentence, it says, I woke up and it had to be stopped, and I cannot take one more drink. That's where it is. That's the utter defeat. You know, if you think you have one more drink in you, go get it, because you're going to find out until you are so ready to be done that you're not. And that's okay. You know, you're not going to be done. My last drink, my utter defeat, was, some people have heard this before, I went to rehab. I was a huge beer drinker. I smelled like beer all the time. So, you know, I made it a month, and I came home, and I decided I had to get one more drink, but I couldn't drink beer because even my kids knew what beer and dad smelled like. You know, they'd give me a hug, and I'd smell like beer, and they go, dude, you've been drinking again. So I tried vodka, you know, because in that month I'd heard that in AA, I heard that was the way to go. So you guys taught me well. And the last drink I took in my house, there was a plastic glass full of vodka. It was on a Sunday that my wife found, and I stood there and I went with all the conviction I had in my heart. There's a yard crew across the street, and I said, during the week, those guys came over, and one of the guys had to go to the bathroom, so he poured himself a drink in our house. He used the bathroom, and he left the vodka there, and I just went, that's all I had. And that's when I knew I was done, because I couldn't even lie right. You know, I just looked at her, and she looked at me, and I think we both knew that I was done. I could come up with some great lies, and that was the crap I threw out there. I couldn't even think of anything. I was so beat and tired, and I knew that was it. I knew I was done. I mean, like I said, I couldn't even lie right. I just looked at her like, help, you know, I'm finished. And then the last part of this, when I first came into AA, I thought you did the steps, you did them in order, you're done. You read the big book, you read it once, you're done. And that's not even close now, because this last part of this thing, it says, I told myself I could manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then, and I did. And that's what happens when we're years sober, you know, when we are. When I read this big book now, I don't read it like a newcomer anymore. I don't read it like, you know, my last drink. I've had my last drink, I think, I hope. I mean, I don't have that craving anymore. But when I hear people share in meetings that have been sober 5 years, 10 years, they get so sure that they've got this, and things happen. You know, it's not I drank because I stopped coming to meetings. You can probably make it through that. You don't drink, you know, some of us, because you stop calling your sponsor. But when you get back in charge and you think you've got it, and you honestly think you've got one more try, you know, maybe I can get, I've been sober 5 years, I've been sober 10, one drink isn't going to do it, you know, I'll be fine, I can have one drink now, I've done this. And that's when you hear those people say, man, it just started all over again. So thanks for letting me share that with you.
Thank you. All right, next reading is on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. But it was not, for the frightful day came when I drank once more. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. After a time, I returned to the hospital. This was the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain, perhaps within a year. She would soon have to give me over to the undertaker or the asylum.
First thing I have to say is that I'm really grateful that I'm not on that merry-go-round anymore. Every day I'm grateful for that. I have been sober for almost 20 years, and especially more lately because I have a practicing alcoholic in my home. I am very, very grateful that I do not wake up with the obsession to drink, and I'm not overrun with the justifications and the rationalizations of alcoholism anymore. And AA has saved me from that and has given me a life of a level of internal peace because of that. And it's very soul-sickening to live in that torment. And what I mean by that is exactly what it's talking about here, is that, first of all, I didn't know that I suffered from a reaction to alcohol that was different than other people. I did not know that for a long time, and I thought I was just weak-willed, that I was morally flawed and a broken person. I thought that I was crazy, and that's why I couldn't get it together like some of the people that I went to school with and even some of the other drinkers that I was around. And I thought that there was something a matter with me. I didn't understand that it was alcoholism, but I thought there was something a matter with me that was going to push everybody away my entire life, and that this cycle of drinking, bad consequences, trying to stay sober, and drinking again was just going to keep going on and on and on forever. It probably would have if I hadn't found Alcoholics Anonymous, or Alcoholics Anonymous hadn't found me. I went to adolescent treatment, and when I was there, I was so, I related. I was like, yes, I have this thing. I totally have alcoholism all the way. I was there with a pack of other teenagers, and we all related on the crazy story front and the way that alcohol affected me. I'm definitely powerless over alcohol, but I did not get that second half of the first step, that my life was therefore unmanageable, and also the extreme soul sickness and moral decline that comes along with that. Because what happens for me is I need a drink. I need to feel comfortable. I need something to take the edge off of my life. I need something that helps me get along with other people, and therefore I just keep lowering the bar over and over and over again. Whatever moral standard it had, like I remember being 12 or 13 and being in a prayer circle, DARE, with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and I had no intention of ever becoming an alcoholic and a drug addict at that time. No way, you know, and the bar just kept getting lower and lower, and then after a while, it's like, wow, you know, he's actually really kind of cute once you get to know him for a while, you know? And the other things like stealing and cheating and lying, and those are all things that I had that I didn't want to do, and I felt ashamed of when I actually got a chance to look at the darkness in the mirror. And I did, when at that adolescent treatment program, I did think, oh, hey, I know it. I got this, you guys. I got this, to my counselors. I totally have this. And they were like, Harmony, if you leave this and you do not leave and go to meetings and get a sponsor, you are going to die. And we're pretty sure you are going to be one of the ones that dies. And I was like, no, I got this. You know, like, I've got a scholarship. I'm going to keep working at Dairy Queen with my, you know, ex-con boyfriend. And maybe I will, I'll just go to the parties, but I won't drink anything there. Like, I got this. I'm totally fine, or whatever. I understand. I'm powerless over alcohol. And the day will come where you will drink again. And those were some of the worst drunks of my entire life, not because I drank too much or anything, but just because I realized I was totally, had no control over this whatsoever. It didn't matter how much I had learned in treatment, and the stuff that I am capable of doing in order to get a drink in my system, it got worse. So that's all I have to share on that.
Thanks. My name is Mike. I'm still an alcoholic. When I first got here and we started doing step one in the book, you know, I tried to fight this and find my way out of this any way I could. I came here to take the heat off, like a lot of us do, and I just didn't want to do it. You know, I couldn't fathom that this was how life was going to be. You drink when you go to the movies. You drink when you go to dinner. You drink when you go to your kids' PTA meetings. You know, you drink everywhere. You just drink. What am I going to do now? So maybe you guys can teach me that little secret thing, you know, and we'll go on. And it said right here, I was so excited when I, you know, when I jumped in the big book, because I was on page 7, and it's right here. He said, "It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor." I read that right to my wife. I said, "See, man, they know. You know, I got a problem. It's not a big deal. I'll just cut back. You know, it says it right here in this book that they're making me read that I got a problem. But everything else, the next little thing says it remains strong in other respects, so I'm good. You know, we can cut back on the drinking a little bit. And everything's going to be okay." And then it says right down here, it says self-knowledge, and that's what I ran on. I knew that the way I was drinking was the way everybody else drank. I knew that I wasn't getting in any trouble. I knew that everything was good. I didn't count the two times I got arrested because I was 25 and they were both on major holidays. You know, Wednesday before Thanksgiving, you get a DUI. That's all right. You know, no big deal. I got a drunk in public on the 4th of July. I actually spent more time in jail on the drunk in public than the DUI. So I'm not getting any consequences. I know how to get out of trouble. I should have been arrested 4 or 5 other times, but I was so big and happy and goofy, the policemen just laughed. They just were like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "I'm not." Like, one time I was urinating outside of a car, and he walked up, and he actually said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, can I just finish? And then we can talk." And he was like, "Dude, just finish." And he really was, "Just finish, and then we'll get you home." And so there was nothing, there was no problem. You know, I didn't think, you know, I went to work every day. There was no money problem. It didn't occur to me that I left a wife and a kid squatting in a house in Virginia Beach when I just turned tail and left. You know, it didn't occur to me that we were fine paying our bills with like 10 or 15 credit cards until we went bankrupt. But we're okay. You know, you go bankrupt, you start over. You know, you got money, it's not a big deal. And I drank us out of that. It's okay. You know, I thought it was great to have girlfriends, and I had girlfriends, but that's not a great idea when you're married. It doesn't go over big at all. And I was, and I don't say that to be funny or any, I was a pig. You know, I spent money I didn't have, ran around on my wife, we'll just stop with that, and got arrested and did things you're not supposed to do. But I had no willpower. I mean, I had no idea that I didn't know what I was doing or what to do. It was all me. If I could go out and have a good time, if I could go out and just be ready to go to work. That's all I based life on. You know, that's the only thing that scared me, was not being able to go to work. If I could get up every day and go to work, and some of you know what I do, and it's not the greatest place to go in hungover. I teach school. I actually teach kindergarten. So if you can imagine 20 little people yelling at you, singing at you, dancing at you when you're ready to die. And I did it all the time. You know, I did it all the time. Thankfully, I didn't get daily drink until the last 5 or 6 years when I'd been teaching about 20 years. So I kind of had a handle on it. I knew what I was doing, but it still wasn't anywhere close to being the right thing at all to do. You know, I'm sitting there taking other people's children, the responsibility for them in my hands, going, "Be good people, follow the rules, learn your ABCs," and then at night that Dr. Jekyll thing comes out and I'm running the streets like a crazy man. You know, because I was in charge, and it says right here, it says self. You know, I'll even take off the knowledge part. But I had no idea that that's what was going on. I had no idea that, and we'll get to it later, that I couldn't control this, because I really thought I was controlling every bit of it. So thanks.
Thank you so much. Next reading is on page 24. "The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
So there was a drunk where I got myself, my dad's car wedged like somehow between a ravine and a house. I don't know, like, but it was sideways and I couldn't get it out. And I ended up being really, really late for curfew and got in trouble with my father. And there's another time where I drank vodka really too fast and it hit me really too quickly. Like I'd rather have it have the drunk progress a little bit slower than it did, but I got hit with like vomiting. Like my body was too drunk to move, so all I could do is just vomit all over myself. And my friends changed me out of clothes into random clothes, and then when I got home that night, I threw those clothes underneath my dad's car, which is really a dumb idea. And then I had to try and explain why there was vomit-filled clothes under my dad's car. And just these examples go on and on and on and on. And there were fist fights. There were ugly things that I said to other people. There were makeout sessions. There was stealing. There was late curfews. All of those kind of things. And I still... When people would say to me, Harmony, there's a party on Friday night, you gonna be there? I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna be there. Definitely, I'll be there. No problem. Like, there wasn't even a hesitation. There wasn't even a like, well, maybe I'm one of those people that maybe I shouldn't drink. I did start to have some of those things later on in my drinking where I did, like I told you, I was trying to not drink. I was trying to control it. But I had... despite all of those things that would happen and all the evidence and all the people that hurt and the lies that I had to tell to continue to drink, I kept doing it. And I'm definitely one of those people that have an alcoholic mind. We'll talk about it a little while later where there is a glitch that's broken and my mind justifies it and says that it's okay, you can do it. Like, maybe you won't throw up on yourself this time. Maybe, but if you do, it'll still be fun. So,
when I first got sober, I was actually way more mad sober than I ever was drunk. You know, when I was drunk, I was whatever. You know, if you wanted to go, you could go. If you didn't, that was fine. I was going to have a good time. And then when I got sober, I was so proud of myself. You know, I was that guy who was like, I'd go to meetings for 45 minutes, go sit in the car and cry for 15, and go home and want them to be so happy that I spent an hour at a meeting, you know, and they would say, well, are you going tomorrow, right? And I'm like, I guess so, yeah, you know. And I got in so many arguments with my friends because I didn't know that people in these rooms yet were like me, and my friends, who had been my friends forever, were like me in certain ways, but definitely not in this way because they didn't have this. You know, one of my brothers gave me the biggest hug in the world. And he goes, I knew you had that willpower. I knew you could quit when you wanted to quit. I knew it was just a matter of time and you just decided to stop. I said, God, you're crazy. You know, and we almost got into it because I was like, I would have stopped this years ago, dude. If I could just have said, I'm done. You know, the stuff I've been doing is not a matter of willpower. I'm running crazy. And anybody would have stopped if they could have stopped. I have no willpower, but that's something he couldn't hear and something I couldn't explain to him. And my friends were like, you know, we'd get into arguments about same stuff, you know, and I'd say, well, you know, I have this craving and this mental twist. And they're like, shut up. What are you talking about? You drink a lot and you need to stop, you know? But I was like, I'm so proud of myself. Listen to what we do in this book. And they're like, next, you know? But because that has nothing to do with them. That has absolutely nothing to do with them. But when I come in these rooms, it has everything to do with us. You all know what that means. You all know what it feels like to say I'm not drinking today and swear on every stack of everything and then do it the next hour, you know, and stuff like that. And it says in here, you know, suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month. I couldn't even go a day. And I was, there were days I was so, at the end, I was so embarrassed. And I was suffering so bad. My sponsor's here, and he knows this. For like 2 or 3 years, there's this bathroom at school. You know, it's a little kid's bathroom. And I'd go in there before school and put my head on the side of the thing and just pray that that cool thing would suck my headache away before 20 little people came rolling in there, because I couldn't even get, and I wasn't going to do it that afternoon. I was not going to do it. And I'd get in the car and stop and buy beer on the way to pick up my infant son. You know, that's how long that lasted. I couldn't even get through the suffering and humiliation of a day, let alone, you know, a week or a month. And then, you know, it says certain consequences. The certain consequences, pretty much, if we're an alcoholic, is we're gonna destroy ourselves, pretty much, bottom line. Slowly, quick, you know, after a long time, whatever. I can get behind the wheel of a car and drive, and my mind says, that's all right, no big deal, I know how to get home, and I can kill myself or someone else, or I can just keep on going. You know, I had, my medical problem was gout. You know, I had gout, and that is the most painful stuff you've ever had. You can't put a sock on. And my smart aleck mouth, and I'll remember it the day he told me, he said, you drank too much. That, the doctor said, that's why you have gout. And I said, looks like I'm going to have gout for a little while longer. You know, I don't know what else to tell you, because I'm not doing what you're telling me to do, you know, because I didn't know. Again, I'll go back to, I had no idea that I had no choice in this matter. I just, really honest to God, thought I drank a lot and knew I was going to do it for a long time more. So thanks.
Thanks. Next reading is on page 34. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. How then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking, for obviously this is the crux of the problem. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking?
This is an important question. I want to welcome you if you're new, and I've helped a lot of people get sober, and I've helped a lot of women look at their alcoholism and try to determine for themselves if they are alcoholic. And it's an important question, and really we can help you, but nobody can really answer it for you. But I can tell you why I know I'm an alcoholic. And it was really important for me to know that. I mean, people have said to me over the course of 20 years that they spilled more than I drank, that I didn't drink that long, that I maybe I was just an immature teenager, and that my brother told me that it was bad parenting, that my parents were the reason. And he holds on to that big time. Like he does not think I'm an alcoholic that needs AA. And so how do I know that I absolutely am an alcoholic? And the first thing is that when I take alcohol into my system, there's a explosion. It's like fireworks. It lights up into my stomach, and I had that feeling from the first drink to the last drink. And it is something that my brain always remembers. It's something that my brain craves. It's something that my soul craves. I want that feeling, and I wanted it every time that I drank. I also, once I put alcohol into my system, I can't tell you how much I'm going to drink. It may just be five or six. It may be a all-night run. I can't say I had runs for days and days and days, but I could not control the amount of alcohol that I drank once I got some alcohol into my system. That's why today I'm kind of a purist. I don't even cook with alcohol because I don't know what's going to set off that little obsession that's going to start me. I'm not saying you have to do that. That's just what I do because I don't know what's going to start off that. I don't know if oxycodone's going to start it off. I don't know if Ambien will start it off. I don't know. Like something, all it takes is a little flicker and the fire will just rage on, and I don't want to start that process. The other thing is that despite all of the evidence, like we've been talking about, my brain will make the excuse to drink again over and over and over again, and it's completely illogical. So I work in the medical field. I work with doctors, and we work with alcoholics and addicts. One of the things that is so hard for them to understand is exactly that, this insane thinking. And the best way I try to describe it to them is that alcoholics and addicts, we are absolutely insane. It makes no sense. And to these people that, their lives are built on logic, their careers are built on logic, and 2 + 2 = 4, alcoholic and alcohol isn't good, and the fact that our brains can never get that is just so hard for normal people to understand, but I understand it. I totally understand it. I understand that the guy with the swollen liver just needs to feel better that day and woke up to a life that's hell. He knows he's dying, and it's especially because of that, he needs to get a drink that day. I understand that, and that's why I need, that's why I'm an alcoholic.
This is another paragraph that I think brings up the example of how I read the big book different now with some time. In the beginning, this was one of those 2 or 3 paragraphs. If I read this, I wouldn't know what this means or what it's talking about, or I'd skim it because none of that makes sense at all. Quit upon a non-spiritual basis. I don't know what any of that means. The question is how to stop. Okay, how? All right, just tell me. Just get this over with. Make it go away. But now when I go back and read this, I Harmony said the questions are there, and I look at it in a different way. Is my job now, and you would think this isn't the step one thing we're talking about, but my job now is to answer these questions for another alcoholic who's just as lost as I was at the beginning. To tell a guy, you're okay. It's okay to not understand what this means. I don't understand what it all means, but I've been coming long enough, I can tell you some things that happened to me. And some of those things that you did, they're not so bad. They're just what we do, And I've got to put this idea in his, not an idea in his head, but just to say, this is an alcoholic. This is what I did. This is what I do. Here's how I can help you, And that doesn't very much... The beginning sound like step one to me at the beginning, but it says it right in here. It says what sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic, and I can tell them. I can say, hey, man, this is what happens, So, like I said, as I've gotten further along in this, thank goodness I had a sponsor who said go through the steps and then keep doing them and read the book and keep reading it because you're going to get different things out of it. So if you're new and you read this paragraph and it looks like it's all squiggly and wiggly, that's all right. Keep reading it and read it over again, and we'll see what happens. So thanks.
Okay, page 37. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, But there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves, in all earnestness and sincerity, how it could have happened.
So, again, this is extremely important if you're new. This is something that you have to get for yourself. You have to strongly encourage you to look at your own thinking and pull up examples of the ways that your brain is insane. For me, I had a period of a couple of weeks where I wasn't drinking, and during that time period, I became really attached to a family of foxes in my backyard. And I would sit there and I would watch them from my window, and I felt like God had given me a gift of baby foxes to help keep me sober. I'm telling you the truth, okay? And the mom packed the baby foxes off and took them off one day, and I drank that night because I can't stay sober without the foxes. So the other night I had a guy who OD'd, and yes, heroin's a different beast than alcoholism, but what he told me was, you see, like, I shouldn't have drank and smoked pot before I shot up, because then I injected too much. And I said, wrong. That's not at all what happened, bud. I'm sorry. And though I have a lot of examples for myself, and I have witnessed it, and I encourage my sponsees to have, you know, a good 5 examples that they can pull out of a hat whenever they talk to a newcomer, just so that this is the reason why I need Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I could go out there in the world and prevent myself from having those crazy thoughts on my own, then I could just go do that. I wouldn't have to come in here. I wouldn't have to have a spiritual awakening. I wouldn't have to do the steps. I wouldn't have to have a sponsor. I wouldn't have to have the eight people around me. But I cannot stop those insane ideas from occurring. I still can't stop them at 20 years of sobriety. That's what I am totally powerless over. And because I understand that deep down in my gut, it gives me the willingness to keep coming back and to do the things that I need to do. And I do not ever want to get back into that grips again, where those insane ideas actually become sane again. And you can look somebody in the eye and repeat those things out loud and have no idea that is the most insane thing that you, like, it's coming out of your mouth right now.
I guess what, you know, when I was new, I wish I had had thicker skin, a lot thicker, because I was just, like I said before, I was always mad at what you were saying to me, because we get to step 2 and you say, restore me to sanity. How dare you? You know, I'm not insane. The stuff, you know, it says I can make some insane trouble with the excuse for taking the first drink. My excuses were well reasoned out. You know, I planned that. You know, half the time or 3/4 of the time, I drank just to get drunk and have a good time. That's not an excuse. That's fun. That's what you're gonna do. You know, don't call me insane. I'm not insane. You know, just because every day I make a promise to whoever I'm promising to that I'm not going to drink that day, and just by 2 o'clock I'm drinking again and I'm out of my mind. Don't call me insane. That's what everybody does. That's okay. You know, and don't call me insane because I lie to every single person that I run into, because they know now. You know, I don't talk to my mom and dad anymore after 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because it hurts my mom's heart to hear me slur and tell the same story again. But, you know, they can talk to me before noon. You know, and don't call me insane for, you know, promising my kids I'll be somewhere and either show up drunk and embarrass them or don't show up. You know, that's not insane. That's just being a dad, you know, whatever. You know, don't, you know, this is the meanest thing, God, I swear, you know. I would always just say to my wife, well, you know, you married into this. You knew what you were getting into. What a pig. you know, what an absolute pig. But that was my way to start a fight to drink. You know, if I couldn't drink, I was going to ruin it or start a fight. You know, we weren't going anywhere where there wasn't alcohol because I could make it miserable for everybody, or I was going to find a way to drink. And if that's not crazy, you know, what is? And like I said, every excuse for taking that first drink to me, again, back to me, wasn't trivial. I had a great reason every time, you know. And so I'll stop with that.
Page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more, for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow.
I had and still have those mental blank spots. If you've experienced them, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's where normally my head and my thoughts move at a little bit like a clip, where, you know, like there, it's pretty rational, and I can solve problems, I can work, I can interact with other people, but there's times where there are these literally like my mind becomes blank, or I can't really pull up a full sentence, or like a sound, like a really sound idea. I know it sounds completely nuts or whatever, but you know, I would have those when, like I said, when I wasn't supposed to be drinking, I had no intentions of drinking, and next thing you know, I'd be drunk again. And some of the times there were some little excuse for drink, like I had gotten into a fight with my parents, or, you know, like I said, the fox is moving away, or something like that. But there was other times where my mind was just blank, and I was doing something out of complete habit and out of without any thought to it at all. And what happened for me was that I became fully aware that the reason why I had all of these problems was because of my mind, that the problem of alcoholism and that my problem centered in my mind. And that's when I really became scared. I was very fortunate because I was going to meetings at that time. And at that time where I became fully aware of my powerlessness over my alcoholism, my powerlessness over my actions when it came towards alcohol, at that same time, some people that really understood alcoholism came into my life and were able to teach me exactly what was going on with me. And they showed me that Alcoholics Anonymous could intervene in my life, and that I could stop the downward spiral of insanity and chaos and drinking and consequences and everything that was just going to keep happening in my life. And I wasn't at that time that I arrived at those meetings in a very desperate place. I actually wasn't drinking at that time. Like, I was taking some other pills, but I wasn't drinking, and I was terrified that I was going to drink again. I was absolutely terrified that it was going to hit me, because I was absolutely miserable, and all of my actions were still the same, and I really didn't have any clue how to stop that myself from drinking again at that point. And I have to tell you that that's a great place to be in. It sounds horrible, but if you're here and you're desperate and you have no idea how to stop drinking, like that's a jumping off place that we can help you if you're feeling that bad.
when, you know, when I first started reading the Big Book, these are the paragraphs now, you know, before I didn't know, these are the paragraphs I liked, because it was a guy telling his story and telling what happened, and I could relate to that, because, you know, I would think, and I'd go, you know, I wrote a great lesson plan for a great lesson that's a couple days away, and I'm going to go just drink, you know, because I'm ready. I'm ready to, that's going to be the great lesson. And then I'd go to school hungover, and it'd be awful, and nothing would go right. Or I'd be that, you know, I've got plenty of time tomorrow morning before school to get that lesson together. So I'm going to have a couple beers tonight, get up early, get that thing together, and it's going to be great. And I'd be so hungover because, again, I have no defense. That one drink led to however many it led to, you know. So these kind of things, when someone would tell their stories, I would be like, ah, now we're kind of getting to it. You know, he said he had an alcoholic mind. Maybe I do too, because even though I'm not a businessman or whatever, he seemed to have had no defense. You know, he had it. He had a good thing going, and he just wanted one drink, and it went to Crazyville in 1 second. And again, I think Harmony said the mental blank spots. This is where I read this different. I have mental blank spots, and what this makes me think of is what I did to others in my home and around me, because they don't have those mental blank spots. You know, I don't get an excuse or a free pass there. You know, when I had to make amends, they remember almost all of it, you know, and happily would bring it up sometimes, and still do. Not happily, but my wife will say something, and she'll see the look on my face, and she goes, "You don't even have a clue, do you? You don't remember?" And I'm like, "No." And we've almost gotten to the point where that's okay, you know. She's like, "Okay," or she'll start crying, you know, at something that happens, and I'm like, "What are you crying for?" And she goes, "Don't you remember?" And I'm like, "No," you know, and I. There's nothing to do there but hug her and let her cry it out. You know, and my kids the same way. They'll say, "Dad, remember when you did this?" I'm like, I don't, sorry. But I can be a good dad now. That's the best I got right now. You know, I can be a good husband right now. That's the best I got. You know, I can be a good son right now. That's the best I got. You know, but those mental blank spots are there, and I mean, and they happen, and I can't fill in all the blanks, and that's okay too. So thanks.
Page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. We have a couple minutes for you guys to wrap.
That was a very hard place to come to. And like I said, I had come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really understood that I was a person that couldn't drink, and I was terrified of drinking again, and I didn't know how I was going to stop this. And I didn't want to go on for 70, 80 years of misery, and I didn't necessarily want to live life forever without alcohol. I was kind of hoping that somebody could tell me how I could control it and not have all the bad stuff happen. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, they told me, you know, you're going to have to find a higher power. And I just recently dealt with that with one of my sponsees, and she came and she said, I need to find a higher power. And I was like, yes, exactly. We all do. We all need to find a higher power, 100%, yes. But I cannot find a higher power on my own. I tried. I did it out there. And what I had to do was come into Alcoholics Anonymous and follow the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the first thing is that I got a sponsor, because I have a broken, you know, channel to God. So everything that my brain thinks is right is not right. And so I need somebody to run it by to say, no, you're absolutely insane. That's not a good idea, you know. Also someone to help show me what steps to go. Oh, you know what? This is a four-step problem. This sounds like a resentment. I think you should write it down on your four-step. That is what I needed. And I had to go through the process of the steps. And in order to open up my channel and to get a conscious contact with a higher power. And I can tell you, when I was new, I did not spend a lot of time analyzing who God was. I didn't. My sponsor and the people in AA, they got me into action. They got me busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they said, don't worry, God will find you. And that's exactly what happened. You don't need to know who God is, what she is, like where she lives, any of that stuff in order to stay sober. You have to come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and you have to do what we do, and then you can have what we have. And what I have is a grace. And I like to call it my happy bubble. And I do not live all the time where I love everybody, where I'm nice all the time, or where I always feel like God's taking care of me. That is not what, that's not my spiritual awakening. My spiritual awakening is that I was relieved of the bondage of alcoholism and the obsession to drink over and over again. And I don't know what keeps me in that bubble. I don't know if it's 4 meetings a week. I don't know if it's working the steps. I don't know if it's getting down on my knees and praying in the morning. I don't know if it's the fact that I stay physically sober. I think it's a combo of all of it, and I don't want to mess it up. Whatever it is, I'm just going to keep doing what I did since I was very new, because I don't ever want to go back to that level, to the alcoholism that I once lived in, and I don't know what keeps me in God's grace, and I just want to stay there for the rest of my life. That's all I have to share.
We started reading today on page 5, and when we got to page 43, this is where my sponsor always made me and makes me read through all this misery and all this craziness and all these questions and all these whys, and then he get one sentence: his defense must come from a higher power. In this book, it always comes to a pretty simple thing. You know, there it is. His defense must come from a higher power. That's it. You know, I never thought of higher power or God or anything, but, you know, I think he was always, was always there, and I was blocking it. Me. That was the problem. And when I smashed that ego, when I found out, when I realized that I couldn't stop, it says it in here, self-knowledge, self-will, peculiar mental twist, all of that stuff. When I turned it over to that higher power, that stuff went away. I don't know when. I don't know how. I don't want to know how. It's gone. And it doesn't say in here, this defense is a lifetime guarantee. I get a daily reprieve if I do those things and do these things every day and turn it over to him or whoever. Then I get to be sober and be happy. So thanks.
Thank you so much, guys. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements? Okie dokie. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety you would like to welcome?
Could you say that again?
Anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety? What's your name?
My name is Isaiah.
Hi, hey, Isaiah. Welcome, Isaiah. Glad you're here. Anybody else? We have literature available over there on that little table. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you would like some. And if you can fold it, it is free. We have newcomer packets too. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank our panel one more time? Thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the stuff discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, which is on Colonial and 22nd Street. And could I have a volunteer to read the last three paragraphs on page 164?
Brad, I'm an alcoholic.
Brad.
Hold on now. Alright. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. And all those who would like, please join me in closing the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever.